You are listening to Friends of Europe's podcast. Don't miss our debates on global and European issues that span political, economic, social, and environmental challenges, and follow our website at friendsofeurope.org.
If I could have everybody's attention, including the speakers. My name is Giles Merritt. I'm the Secretary General of Friends of Europe, and I shall be co-moderating with Shadr Islam, who was one of the moderators in the first session, which struck me as extremely interesting. It also looked a bit like a refugee conference. Now, that's not surprising. The refugee and migrant issue for transit countries in the Western Balkans is going to be just as serious this year as it was last year. But crises have a habit of managing what slow diplomacy cannot. Crises have a habit of bringing people together, concentrating minds, focusing on issues. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see both how the EU government and the Western Balkans countries, most of which are accession countries, and we welcome Bosnia-Herzegovina to the queue, be very interesting to see how those governments actually deal with things. But in the second session, I want to widen it out. I want to talk about, I think, the key issue is the Western Balkans region a collective political and economic reality? Or is it just a fragmented, as we used to say, a balkanized region? It's now 6 months, almost to the day, since the Western Balkans summit in Vienna. And that, despite the fact that the refugee crisis was going on, seemed to me to signal a really interesting shift in attitudes. A whole series of transport and energy shared projects were signed up to and embarked upon. So what I hope we can look at in this second session is, to what extent are those commitments being translated into actions? With which I happily hand over to Shada, first of all to introduce our panel and then just to get the speakers speaking.
Yeah, I will indeed, Giles. You can be sure of that. Thank you very much indeed for coming to our second session, which, as Giles has said, is about regional cooperation. And I guess the message we would send, Giles, is a bit that integrate before you integrate. So before joining the EU, there should be at least major progress made in terms of regional integration. And the issue of Balkans connectivity came up yesterday and earlier today as well. And I think that's what I would like to focus on. Let me introduce our panelists very, very briefly, because you have the CVs in the conference pack and I don't want to waste too much time. So on my right, Mr. Ditmir Bushati, Albanian Minister for Foreign Affairs. Thank you very much indeed for coming. We also have Igor Sernadek, thank you very much, Bosnia and Herzegovina's Minister of Foreign Affairs, coming with some very good news about the application for EU membership, as Giles pointed out. Mr. Arban Abrashi, Kosovo's Minister of Labour and Social Welfare, welcome as well. To our right here, Goran Slavanovic, Secretary General of the Regional Cooperation Council. Goran, welcome back. And last but not least, Ratislav Vrbrensky, he's Manager of the Istanbul Regional Hub for Europe and the CIS at the United Nations Development Programme, one of our partners for this conference. Now, let's kick off actually with you, let's kick off with you, Minister. In terms of regional cooperation, there's not much good news coming from the region. As Giles said, lots of promises made in Vienna and afterwards, but actually practically on the ground, what would you say is really happening that gives you a certain degree of pride?
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to come back here, and concerning the question, I would say that it's quite logical that we should not expect a major breakthrough from the Balkans, considering the fact that the project of ever closer union is facing also certain challenges, and these are reflected also in our realities in the Balkans. Last 2 years, we have noticed progress on some of these crises when it comes to the discouraging of foreign fighters, on the work Balkan countries have made together and also with European and American partners on countering violent extremism, the way how we have positioned ourselves in line with foreign policy positions and crises that have challenged and threatened the security architecture of Europe in the eastern and southern flank. There has been also progress in terms of regional cooperation, streamlining further regional cooperation due to the Berlin process. We have seen also an improved relations between different countries in the region, starting with normalizations of our relations as Albania with Serbia. And we have seen also, and we have already what we call a connectivity pact. So a few years ago, a decade ago, maybe Goran Zvilanovic it's a witness of these developments in the region, we had a stability pact. Last year in Vienna we reached a connectivity pact, but we are still in search of an economic development and democratization pact. And here is where European Union could enter and could help countries in the region in order to advance in these process, and we would prefer to have a little bit more soul and more political determination coming from European Union, because there is also a feeling sometimes that we are being called to discuss on times of crisis, but we need to discuss also with a little bit more strategic tone about the near future of our relations and about the current interdependence that can be transformed into enhanced cooperation between EU on one hand and Western Balkans on the other.
This is just a very quick follow-up. It is a two-way street, isn't it? I mean, it's not enough to just ask for soul and determination from the EU. Wouldn't you say that your region is perhaps not showing the exact degree of determination that needs to be illustrated at this point?
It's true that this is a two-way process. On one hand, we have to stick to the commitments, but on the other hand, we need also more certainty and more clarity in the process. It's amazing to hear nice and good words about Bosnia's application for EU membership, and I would like to commend the efforts being put forward by Bosnian authorities in this respect. But let's not forget that 7 years ago, when my country applied for EU membership, the tone was a little bit different. When Macedonia applied for membership, when Croatia applied for membership, when Serbia applied for membership, when Montenegro applied for membership, there were no comments at all. Sometimes, maybe for good reason, you get the idea that everyone is in search of a good news, even when there is not a news.
So we'll come back to the point you made about the tone being different. And I wonder to what extent the refugee crisis, as we see it now with the Balkans rule, will change that tone. We'll come back to that in a second. Minister, tell us a little bit about this application and how important it is. What has been 20 years plus since Dayton?
Yes, first of all, good morning, everybody. It's good to be here for me for the first time. With Friends of Europe. Actually last year we had the 20th anniversary of Dayton celebration, and of course nobody in the country was happy where we are 20 years after the war. We all expected much better situation economically, and so that's why this new European approach to Bosnia and Herzegovina was so important and brought us the new chance, the new opportunity. Also, last year was very important because after 7 years, we unblocked the SAA. So we waited, unfortunately, for 7 years until it was signed, from the point when it was signed until it was activated. And this brought us, I believe, due to the very active and very successful doing by the all levels of government in Bosnia and Herzegovina throughout last year, to the point that we actually yesterday submitted the application. And of course, we understand that this is not something too spectacular. It is a great symbol. It is a great proof that we have done something so far, but it is not something that asks for a celebration much bigger, much longer than one day. So even today we are back in action. Today, just one day after the application, we have the first round of talks between the European Commission and our negotiating team on the adaptation of the SAA after the Croatia joined EU. We need to do this adaptation as one of three short-term priorities, and also in the upcoming weeks we will continue with implementing our reform agenda that was so far implemented in more than 30%, and that's why it was seen as how the European Commission put it, meaningful progress that also drove us to yesterday's ceremony.
So Minister, when you look ahead, you said the reform agenda, the challenges ahead, what do you see as the biggest tasks for you in the coming years if you are to sort of move beyond the application state into a real movement?
Well, I think, first of all, in general, we will have to show all of us in Bosnia and Herzegovina that we are really, substantially, truly for EU, for European integration.
How do you show that?
Well, I think we need to show that it's not just declaration, but it's really like that in practice, by finding the solutions to the problems that will come up in upcoming months and years. So we will have probably the questionnaire with the record number of questions due to our complex structure. And I think coming up with the answers to this questionnaire will actually be the first sign of are we ready to produce this one voice to Brussels from Bosnia and Herzegovina that would include all levels of government, so that when we say something and that we take certain position, that it's something that is backed by everybody, by Republika Srpska, by Federation, like two entities, by the cantons that have their own responsibilities, and I think that's what we're going to how we are going to show that we are serious. And if you ask me about the issues, I think two key groups of issues are in front of us. One is economy related. We have to do some quite remarkable changes, quite big changes in our business climate. Especially we have to continue after we passed the labor laws in this labor legislation, some changes, tax changes also. And the second part, which is also in connection with economy related issues, is fight against the corruption. Because Bosnia and Herzegovina is one of the countries with the highest index of corruption in Europe, and it doesn't only discourage people, it doesn't only bring great financial losses, but maybe even the worst effect is that it literally it just turns off everybody who would think of investing in our country. So I think this economy-related issues and fight against corruption-related issues are a key group of problems in front of us.
That's honest, but let's be quite honest also. This is not just a problem for your country. I mean, this is a region-wide issue. So I'm going to ask Mr. Abrashi now, actually. The region doesn't have a very good brand, and it doesn't. And if it is to get the investments it needs, if it's to get the energy you need to develop, go beyond the more around about 3% growth rate I think you have at the moment, you do need a more stimulating environment. So, what are your thoughts about this?
Exactly. Thank you very much, and I'm really glad I'm here to share my thoughts and opinions about the region and cooperation possibilities, and meet people as well. As said. I think there was a sort of lack of absence or EU being absent in the Balkans since 2008 or post-economic crisis. And I think that left a mark on our relation and on our development, internal development. So in general, we need the EU. EU needs to be there, either in supporting democracy, rule of law, supporting the democracy. But I think at the same time, EU needs a prosperous Western Balkans. Now, when you look at it from a perspective, good things have been made. As I said, Bosnia application, congratulations. Serbia has been some moves. Kosovo has an SAA agreement, so it's moving there. But yet, the public opinion in EU, whenever Western Balkans is talked about, it's like a problematic region. It still has this branding. So we have to develop a sort of a strategy, cross-Balkan strategy, that would rebrand our image as well, besides other instruments that EU has there. So, of course, we are happy with common EU instruments that they are there in place, and they support us in establishing democracy, rule of law, and economic. But we need to go beyond that, beyond ourselves, and EU needs to go beyond business as usual, in branding and delivering more to the region. So there is a good momentum with Western Balkan 6. I really appreciate that. So it's coming there. It's infrastructure, basically. It will bring jobs. But what is very, very important, and we discussed, it was discussed, how to say, in the first session, migration. We need to do some sort of Western Balkan 6 or whatever we could name it, but focus on the human capital of the Western Balkans. We really need to invest on the human capital of the Western Balkans, something like a precondition to new jobs and to the economy. This would also rebrand the Western Balkans. EU got back to the Balkans, how to say, per se, for the migration crisis. And this joint effort of the EU and our countries led to good cooperation, good strategies being developed, and in case of Kosovo, it had good results. We had a migration flow as well in beginning of last year, basically, but with the efforts of the regional countries, with police cooperation, with EU in help and EU ambassadors, either in public relations or PR, we stopped it, basically stopped, because people in Kosovo had a different, and in the region, had a different idea what Europe is all about. So basically they were coming to EU to get a better life or economic reasons. I thought that just once you get to EU, you get a pension or a job just like that. So we need to invest in human capital in the Western Balkans to change the brand, to change the image of Western Balkans and create new jobs that are, or human capital that is capable to create new jobs for the coming years. Mm-hmm.
So the new jobs, Minister, that you're looking at, I mean, you mentioned manufacturing, I think, but the world really today is about services, innovation, R&D, digital. Are these the focus of your travels?
Basically, now we come to the again to the expertise of organizations that we work and that we get support from, either as a donor, either as an expertise. So we have UNDP, and basically what we try to do is to focus on the best success stories we could have. We have focused on some of the manufacturing based on the surveys we have inside and outside, and we have focused on some manufacturing sectors like IT, like wood industry, metal, IT, agricultural products, and so on. So these are the areas that we could really develop and have success stories from those.
Goran, turn to you now. And so I would like you to comment a little bit on what the different ministers have said about the economic prospects, the regional cooperation, but also to tell us a little bit about your RCC as well. I mean, how do you evaluate what's happening, and what are your plans for taking this further?
Shada, Giles, thank you very much for the invitation this year. And Shada, in particular, I'd like to express my gratitude to you. You just gave me a title of what the RCC is doing and is proposing to these fellow ministers, 4 around. Integrate before you integrate. This is what you just said, I love it. Because what I was telling them is one region, one economy, and they were not necessarily very happy with what I've said. But this is exactly what the RCC is doing, because what we are proposing now is to strengthen the level of cooperation among the six who are in the accession process. And to prove that this is only a part of the process they have to go through while integrating into the EU. And there are issues. And they are rightly asking a question. It was Dietmir, Nikola Popovski has asked a question. When I proposed what I'm going to share now with you, they said, oh, Goran, are you sure that this is what we're going to do? Because what I'm putting on the table now is a regional investment agreement. We hope to launch a process of negotiations in the course of this year, and then negotiations might last another several years to reach a point in which, while I see a head of Nafta Industria Serbia, one of the partners here, and one of the investors in the region who might be very happy to say, okay, I have a headquarters in Belgrade, does it mean that I can invest around hoping that the level playing field is same or very similar? This is exactly what we are trying to do. And I hope the investors will support us in this endeavor. It is not easy, but this should actually strengthen a cooperation in economic terms across the region that we are now referring at as the Western Balkans. We are witnessing a competition. It's huge. You can ask the government in Belgrade and government in Skopje. They are really front runners when it comes to attracting investors. But we believe there is room for something called a regional investment agreement. Second, skills and mobility, guided by the idea that I've just shared with you, we try to open up the borders for the labor within the region. Meaning, one thing we're going to do, we are starting negotiation this year, a list of qualifications. Dentist in Belgrade, dentist in Sarajevo. This is not the case today. We want to get there. And in order to get there, they need to agree on the list of qualifications they all respect. Second, related to this, is automatic recognition of diplomas. We don't have it now. And we want to get to the point where once you graduate medical school in Sarajevo, you are a doctor in Pristina. This is what we are doing. Integrate before you integrate, and we are going to get there. And connectivity, and there I can say we enjoy a full support of the fellow ministers who are here and those who are not here. This is based on the agreement reached in Vienna, and they've agreed on the corridors, they've agreed on the highways, railways, including the energy cooperation. We are now doing an assessment of what is the economic potential, not only to bring the goods from city A to city B once they build the highway, but what is the potential economic potential along the road. This is what we call economic corridors. We want to end up with economic corridors agreed. And in order to get there, we would like to deal with the soft connectivity-related issues, and one issue is ICT logistics. So we are going to launch a process in order to create an interoperability of ICT logistics along the corridors. And then another thing related to soft measures is roaming tariffs. We are launching a process of negotiations to follow the path of the EU to have an agreement reached among these countries and the providers and the agencies on the same level of tariffs and then to go down and eventually to zero. So what the RCC is today is all about this integrate before you integrate. But I'm now concluding by coming back to the ministers because they are rightly saying, Goran, why are you doing this? Wasn't the name of the game always that the RCC will support us in harmonizing with the EU? Why is now you presenting all of your efforts as harmonizing us among ourselves? My short answer is this is the part of the path you need to go through in order eventually to get into the EU, but the answer might be more complicated and more political, and I'm not necessarily ready to go into the answer immediately. But the accession process is quite a different game after Croatia's accession, and we need to respect it.
I think that's a very valid point. Thank you very much, Goran. Turn now to Ratislav. A little bit of pessimism coming across here about the difficult, the obstacles, the challenges, the different harmonization details that have to be worked out. What is the UNDP's feeling about things that are being done on the ground, perhaps in electricity and networks of that kind?
Okay, thank you very much, and thank you for the invitation. It's a great pleasure to be in this distinguished panel. Our regional center, which I have pleasure to lead, is supporting 18 offices and 22 countries throughout the region, and we are also supporting 6 countries in Western Balkans plus Turkey. It's quite a sizable operation. Last year it was around $140 million US dollars. We work on sustainable human development, and we support country offices, but we also support regional cooperation. We run regional programs. We cooperate with GORAN, RCC, European Union, other institutions. And before I come back to the examples, let me just mention 3 reasons why we believe regional cooperation in Western Balkans is important. The first one is very simple, and no offense. It's economy of scale. Countries are simply too small to be economically viable without creating broader economic space, which is going to be attractive, broader market, which is going to be attractive for investment. They need to cooperate. I'm going to mention some examples on this front. The second one, as we know, some issues are regional in nature, and they require collective action, whether it's floods, disasters, grid action, as we have seen in 2014, whether it's citizen security, terrorism, environment, or water management. And the third one, countries are on different level, and they're very keen to learn from each other. There are solutions being generated by one country which are very inspiring for others, and we have to promote it. A couple of examples. In first category, now we have regional energy system, but of course individual countries are arguably not that attractive for investment in green energy. Hence, experience of Croatia in municipal energy management system looking at energy efficiency, which is now being replicated in Bosnia and Serbia, can create a very good market for investment into green energy in Western Balkans. I can mention other examples in tourism, digital agenda, etc. In second category of regional issues, we have a very successful example, we believe, called CSAC. It's a regional center dealing with small arms. We are running it together with RCC. 15 years of cooperation between all Balkan countries. 350,000 small arms collected and destroyed. Progress in demilitarization of the region. Now a network of 3,000 military officers working on gender-related issues. It's a really already transformational force. Similar category around regional issue is around disaster risk reduction. And there was good cooperation between countries during the floods in 2014. And of course, recovery, it's good beginning for preparedness. And we see more and more interaction between Western Balkan countries to coordinate their approaches to face extreme weather events and to deal with climate change. The last point is around lessons learned and learning from each other. We have seen a wonderful example of Croatian negotiation expertise being used in countries which negotiate currently, Serbia, Montenegro especially. Employment is another example, and we are discussing with Goran and his team a lot. There are examples either in terms of supporting entrepreneurship or employment governance, territorial employment plans, which are successful in one country and can be very easily replicated for another country. Now we are looking into very light platforms which can help countries to come together and to learn from each other. So you were asking about some positive examples. We believe these are positive examples. Of course, whether sufficient has been done in terms of supporting cooperation, that's the question. I think more needs to be done, but it has to be incremental. Countries have to see the results from regional cooperation and build on that.
Thank you very much. My only comment would be time is not on everyone's side. Things are moving very fast in the big world out there. So I guess speed would have to be quickened, if you like. So, Charles.
Thank you. Thank you, Shada. Thank you to our panel. A yearly conference like Friends of Europe's and the Adnan Stiftung's Balkans Conference gives people like Shada and myself a unique perspective that we feel the pulse every year and we can register progress or the lack of it. And I was thinking back about 10 years ago. The story was the unexploited underdeveloped marketplaces of the Western Balkan countries were going to present a wonderful opportunity for Western European and American investors to get in there and really make money. The idea was highly educated potential workforces, existing infrastructure, and peace. Well, where are we now? The truth is, foreign investment is on the wane. It's now two-thirds what it was before the global economic crisis started in 2008. And we know you've had a lot of bad luck. We know you've been hit badly by the global economic crisis. You've been hit by floods. Now you're being hit by being transit countries for the refugee influxes. But what I would like to ask our panelists now is to give marks out of 5 for their own reform programs, because those reform programs were designed to make Western Balkan countries more attractive, more stable, and attractive to foreign investment. And let's try and get an idea from our panelists how well they think those reform programs have been implemented. And we'll start with Goran, and I think we'll leave the ministers to last so they can consider their position. And we'll go from Goran to Ratislav and then to the ministers.
You put me in an
odd position. 5 is good, 1 is not so good.
That much I understand. I was appointed by these ministers who have presented their economic reform programs. And now you're asking me to tell them whether they've done a good job or not. I'm not European Commission. I'm not providing money to them. Vice versa, they are actually financing and contributing to the RCC. But I'd like to say, responding to what you asked me, that first, they have presented national economic reform programs, NERPs, to the Commission. And these programs have been very much linked with the ASI 2020 strategy as proposed and appreciated by all of these ministers. While working on the strategy, they've set the goals they want to achieve for the region. As the regional goals, there are 11. Some are very ambitious. Some proved to be too ambitious. In some other areas, we do see a progress which might even be better than we forecasted several years back. Then they've been asked to adjust the programs, and now each and every have presented economic reform programs. These programs are now very much focused on several areas, and these areas are: one is to re-industrialize. You've questioned one of the speakers previously, saying, you, Shada, you did it, saying, well, isn't it about the ICT now rather than industry? Well, let's be frank. What we've seen in the transition period is we've seen good figures in the privatization process, but this was a jobless growth. Meaning the money was okay on your account, a national account, because you've sold the companies, but people were fired. And then it fights back now, 5 years back, later, 10 years later, you have people on the street who are jobless, and then the money is already spent. Therefore, I'm sorry, but I think it's a good point that they have rethought what they've been doing, all of the governments, and I was part of the government which done the same mistake, and now they are very much focused on employing the people, believing that there are many more social consequences that hit the society as such if one person in one family is fired, and that they need to mitigate this. So this is one of the very good elements. Another one is related to agriculture, because some of the countries are agricultural. The third is very much what you've said, the services. Yes, of course, they continue with the services, but they're all focus on this growth, which will be linked with employment, and not growth as such and people on the streets. Otherwise, yes, we might then deal with the scenarios we've seen in the neighborhood. Therefore, one of the critical elements they've all had in mind is to limit the debt and to try to take control over the process of asking for new debts. Therefore, these countries are not aid-dependent countries. And the programs they presented are very much organized around engagement of the population and employing the people. Therefore, I wouldn't say that the Mark V is deserved by everyone, if by anybody, but I'd say between 3 and 4 would be a common mark, if I dare to say something like that. Meaning, I've seen the shift from beliefs in neoliberal concepts, because it is dying in front of our eyes, as the social welfare state has died years back. So these people are looking for a new concept. And I'm not saying that we know it. I'm saying only that they are trying to be responsible towards their own population and to try to really put on the place, number one, what the people living in these countries, and we've seen it because the RCC is doing on annual basis Balkan barometer to fill the gap for European barometer. We are doing the survey. And there is no difference between people in Djevdjilia or in Peć or in Magnjilane or in Zaječar. They all say, my problem number one is that I am either unemployed today or I fear that in 3 years from now I will be unemployed. So that's absolutely, like 80%+ of people are scared. That's problem number one. Problem number two, overall economic situation. Therefore, what they presented in their economic reform programs was very much about this. And then the RCC is dealing only with one part of it, and this is what they can do and how can regional cooperation increase and help them achieve the national goals as they've been set by the government. So this is what we're doing these days.
So between 3 and 4, the glass is much more than half full, but much remains to be done, right? Okay, let's turn to Radislav and ask you the numbers, Radislav, but also maybe comment a bit on the point that Goran was making about employment, because I think in most industrialized countries, governments understand nowadays that the more you do to try and retain jobs, the less you do to create jobs. And with 40% average unemployment in the Western Balkans, it seems to me retaining jobs could be a real problem.
Yeah. Thank you. Before I give the score, I do always belong to the camp who like to see glass half full. And I've been in Serbia, I've been in Montenegro, working, and colleagues in the room know me for this type of approach. So I would like to look at Western Balkans through positive figures and features. GDP growth is positive again. It's comparatively higher, significantly higher than European Union countries. It's higher than some other regions, which are stagnating. Human Development Index is growing in all the countries. EU accession process is really providing an anchor for a lot of reform processes. And exactly what State Secretary Korčok, which just happened to be from the same country, was saying about Slovakia, that accession really leads to gradual and sometimes almost invisible modernization. Those chapters are not being open and closed without changing situation on the ground. And it really helps countries to focus on right policy choices. So in Serbia, in Montenegro, hopefully in Bosnia and Herzegovina, in all other countries, over time we are going to see progress around various areas. Employment question. And I would like to leave you with one point. There's a lot of focus on competitiveness and connectiveness. It's very important. Investment in infrastructure region needs that. But I would really argue that simultaneously you ministers need to concentrate on institutions, and you need to work on rule of law, enforceability of contracts. You need to work on anti-corruption. You need to invest into education, because you might have infrastructure, but investors are not going to come because population may lack skills which they are looking for. And you really need to be bold. We need to collectively try to change the perception and some of the stereotypes of Western Balkans. So I would really like to give you between 3 and 4 and ask you to be even more ambitious and bold in the future.
3 and 4 is beginning to look like the safe bet. Let's turn to you, Igor Krenadek. You mentioned in your earlier remarks the corruption problem. I came across a figure the other day suggesting that the costs of criminality, ranging from tax avoidance to organized crime, with corruption in between there, suggesting that for the first decade of this century, the cost was about, for the region as a whole, was about $100 billion. Actually a bit more, 100 billion euros. So let's put the reform agenda together with the anti-corruption drive and ask you what your figure is.
I don't know about this figure, I just heard it from you, but I know that we really have no idea how big the damage is, so it might be true. I know that it's sometimes a little bit strange, you know, you have the representative of the country, representative of the Council of Ministers of the country, talking about corruption in his own country, but we would be holding a blind eye on a very serious problem if we would be quiet on this. It is a problem, and I can tell you that one fact that I'm sorry if somebody already heard it, because I've said it a few times. We had a research in which 75% of our people around the country said that they wouldn't report corruption even if they knew about it. And if you combine this with the fact that we are one of the most corrupt countries in Europe, then you have the very very bad message. The message is that people do not trust institutions, people do not feel secure to be the part of this very important process in the society, fight against the corruption, and that's why it's a big problem. But what I do want to say is that the Council of Ministers that is in power now for 10 months, we have done numerous organizational and personal changes, creating the atmosphere, creating opportunity for the independent institutions of judiciary system, especially meaning the courts and the prosecutor's offices, to work, just to do their job. And I think for the first time, we have been able to really declare honestly and non-disputably our political will to fight the corruption. And I think a little bit of optimism is being seen now, but still, until we have good results, it's going to be a problem. But like you said, this is the exactly combination of the priorities for our council ministers: economy reforms plus strong and decisive fight against the corruption. When it comes to the economy issues, which you mentioned in the first part of the question, I would like to, I mean, many of the things are pretty much common for all the countries in the Western Balkans, but I would like to mention one thing also that we see as a big problem, and we'll try to face it and to address it in the upcoming time. This is the very bad situation with the, I call it the entrepreneurship spirit in the country. I will refer to another research that was done in our country, in which 90% of the people in the colleges and the last grades of high school, young people, who were asked what they want to do when they finish with their school and college education, they said they want to do either in the state administration, city administration, or maybe some of them in local telecom company. So you almost have no young people thinking about starting something of their own, implementing some of his or her good idea, implementing all this knowledge and experience that they got through their schooling days. And I think this is also something we need to think about, because this entrepreneurship spirit needs to be awakened if we want more energy among the upcoming generation to fight all the issues that we mentioned. So this is just one thing that I took out of the many issues in economy-related reforms that we are focused on now.
And your number?
Number? It's very hard to give a grade to yourself. I've never been good at this. I'll stick to what Goran said. Yeah.
So you accept Goran's? That you've got 40% of the way to go.
Well, I think Goran made a quite fair assessment, taking into account that we appoint his position. It's quite good. Yeah, it's quite good. Yeah.
Okay. Let's turn to Arban Abrashi on the same topic, but also I'd like to add in entrepreneurship. I recall visiting Tirana 25 years ago, at the time that the message in Albania was entrepreneurship. And this was partly sparked by a fact that a large number of Californian Albanians had come back and were trying to dynamize the startup companies. How well have you done?
We're moving towards that. Basically, we're moving towards that. We're in government since a year now, in a bit, and basically the main focus of the government and all the policies that we have developed was basically economics and everything that would provide growth and jobs. We did a national economic reform plan as a precondition, something we did jointly with you. Then we moved towards two other documents that would serve us as a guiding documents towards creation of new jobs, economy, and getting the economy moving. That is a national development strategy. And another one that we've been a little bit criticized by the EU, sort of, but not that in a big. We're working on a law on strategic investments because we have inherited that sort of legal infrastructure that it was very difficult for the government to invite potential investors. So we're working on this law, and we have passed it in the government. Now it's at the parliament. So we're cleared on the legal infrastructure that would enable us to invest, to bring investors. On the same time, there was a bit of success towards in the last year. We managed to get a very good contract in the energy sector, and now we're just beginning, and we're going to sign a contract, like a 1 billion contract on a new power plant. That is a very good incentive for other potential investment opportunities we might have. So these plans that we drafted through 2015, we did sort of priority of priorities where the possibilities could be, and we have opportunities in tourism, we have opportunities in agriculture, opportunities in IT. But nevertheless, as the minister said, problem is the skills gap and entrepreneurship. We have to get this, and we have been working on this through different forums, through PR, through public debates, through media, that it is the private sector that will bring the growth and jobs, and people, and especially young, should know that. And it's quite challenging. It's quite challenging because what happens in Bosnia basically happens in Kosovo as well. Skills gap is enormous. At the same time, when we face huge unemployment, at the same time, businesses come to us and ask for skilled qualified force. So we have to really invest in professional skills, public-private partnership, or joint regional investment projects that we might have. So it's something we have to tackle, and we're working on that. It's taking time, but we're working a lot on bringing this entrepreneurship idea to the public. Besides doing the PR and some preconditions, we are moving also on grassroots projects, And with support, as I said, from different partners that have expertise, we're putting, they call it ALMPs, active labor market measures, on track, and they're working good. Actually, when we announced a project that we're going to support through one of the active labor market measure support, an idea, and we give out, like, let's say, subvention around 500 contracts, businesses or young entrepreneurs come to us with few thousand ideas. So the budget is limited towards what we have. So it's working well. We have to work a lot on that. On the same time, besides ALMPs, we're working a lot on the agricultural sector, and the government is granting, I think this year's, but last year's budget was around 60 and a bit million only to grants and subsidies for farmers that could develop projects when it comes to agriculture. So we're working on the national levels, creating this legal infrastructure that would enable us to have more investments, as well on grassroots project ideas and supports. Like I said, in ALMPs, we have some sectors that we think can generate jobs and growth. I mentioned that. It's wood industry, textile, agricultural products, processing, IT, textile industry as well. And then on national level, we have the mining industry, energy industry, tourism, that is working well. So we're working on both tracks. We are in government since a year. I think it's moving well, but I won't put any grades. I'll leave that for the others.
His grade is closing to California.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mr. Bushati, let's talk also about entrepreneurship in Albania.
Well, first, on the grading system, I agree with Goran and Igor about his assessment. It's a fair assessment. But let me say something which I consider very important. These exercise of European Commission with Western Balkan countries and with the assistance of Regional Cooperation Council was a good exercise. And all countries tried to do their best, first to understand the scope of the exercise, and second to respond in an appropriate manner. It's just an exercise that shows the importance we attach to this process, but it shows also the weakness of our countries. So it is very important that this process is being accompanied also by the right instruments. It is true that the accession process has evolved, and now we have few other elements that have been added after Croatia joined. Now we see that we have a different approach also in the case of Montenegro, Serbia. In the case of Albania, now we are being asked to do, for legitimate reasons, what we should do before we even start the negotiations on Chapter 23 and 24 on judicial reform, which we consider indispensable also for the capital flow, for the investments, and for other elements that have been mentioned here. So regional integration, it's okay. Everybody is going in that direction. We are transforming ourselves bit by bit from enemies into neighbors, although we are not yet real neighbors, because there is a lot of energy being wasted, I would say, on the way how we sit around the table and how we call each other. And in this context, we really need also the European perspective, because what differs Western Balkans from other hotspots that Europe is facing or Europe is dealing with is the perspective. So we all speak about clear European perspective being confirmed in the Thessaloniki summit back in 2003. And we want this perspective to be materialized. And when it comes to the communication, it's also very difficult. It's true that nowadays you don't win elections on European ticket. You don't lose elections on European ticket. But it is also very true that more advanced country in the European integration process, we see a direct correlation in terms of modernization, in terms of economic investments, and in terms of political openness. And those elements should be taken into consideration. Goran was speaking about one region, one economy. This is good. It's a very good music for my ears. The point is whether we are a region or not. I'm afraid we are not yet a region. I'm afraid we need to be transformed into a region first. I was traveling to Sofia a few days ago for this SECP meeting, and I had to go to Sofia via Munich, and I had to get back home via Vienna. So the point of connectivity is there, and it's very crucial also for transforming our region into a real or in a true region in economic and security and political terms. Then, when we speak about mutual recognition of diplomas, I really appreciate the work of RCC in that respect. And I'm leaving aside the political obstacles and political differences that are existing. But are we sure that this is the most interesting investment right now? Because I'm afraid that people who tend from Western Balkans, like we have seen also the figures, people from Italy, from Greece, even from France, going up north because of the economic reasons. So I'm afraid that people would focus themselves more on the clear perspective, on the economic benefits they see they can achieve. And we have to respond to those demands. I'm not neglecting the fact that having a mutual recognition of diplomas in our region, it's not an important factor. It is an important factor. We need to have more exchange among ourselves. We need to look more after each other and not always towards Brussels. But when we speak about corruption, when we speak about investments, when we speak about entrepreneurship skills, we ought to make sure that we have also the right instruments in place. You mentioned Slovakia, and I visited several times Slovakia before and after you joined the European Union. It would be much fairer for the audience to speak about structural funds, the way how you have benefited from the EU accession process. The same for Bulgaria. I had a very thorough discussion last night with Bulgarian commissioner, discussing also about the way how they manage to access structural funds. And you can identify in your country, you can identify in Bulgaria, projects that have been implemented through EU funding. I'm not trying to paint EU as a cash machine, not at all. It should be a value-based process. It should be a process that has as a guiding compass the democratization aspects of our region, but the instruments should be there. We speak about Berlin process, we speak about Vienna process, now we are going to speak also about Paris process, and I know that grand projects, for the implementation of grand projects, it will take time, but we ought to make sure and we have to offer to tell to our citizens also a clear narrative, an incremental one, that all countries of our region are not only opening chapters and discussing about technical details with bureaucrats, but we are also advancing in political, economic and security terms. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister, for that very frank and honest assessment of where things stand at the moment in the region and in your talks with the EU. We have about 15 minutes or so now for a Q&A with the panelists, so I'd like to ask you to please make very specific questions to one of the panelists, if you like, and to introduce yourself always. Fabio, would you like to come in front? Could you please put up your hand or stand up? Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm from the Austrian Foreign Ministry, a former ambassador to Bosnia and Herzegovina. How would you evaluate, I have a couple of questions, but short, the functioning of CEFTA for regional economic cooperation without Croatia? Second question, we are, of course, being here in Brussels and for EU integration, we're talking about the EU as the main actor, but what about the other actors? What is their contribution to the Western Balkans region, like Turkey, Russia, US, China, and the Arab countries. And thirdly, of course, we talked already about the Berlin process, let's still call it, after the Vienna summit, where, among others, not just connectivity, of course, as the main result, but there was also a youth exchange program mentioned. How important do you think is this for the next generation, that youth can exchange on a regional scale, and in that regard, the role of education and above all, vocational education and training, and coming from development cooperation in my country for the Southeast and East European region, I would ask, it was mentioned, capacity building, know-how transfer, how important is this in the end to achieve regional cooperation and success in the region? Thank you.
Thank you, Ambassador. Three excellent questions, actually, in one go, so that's very good. Is there anyone else? I'm sorry, with the light in my eyes, I can't actually... I see a hand going up. Fabio, right at the back, and that will be the... And the lady there, okay, all right. Yes, I will, yes.
Thank you very much. My name is Jerome Fagerson. I'm a student at Kai Leuven here. We're in 2016, and as you know, we're going to elect a new Secretary General for the United Nations. And as we have two foreign Ministry of Affairs, we thus have a question talking about cooperation. Could we have one representative from the entire region and not having four, five, six different people fighting for one seat that might go to another region? Thank you for your answer. And would you be ready to vote for someone that is like not your own representative? Thank you.
Thank you. Excellent question indeed. The lady, gentleman at the back, and then a lady here. Yeah.
Ante Babic, I'm affiliated with Western Economic Balkan Economic Forum with Eurostar, the newly created think tank. There is a recent study that a guy from Croatia did that most of the hardships and backwardness of the region came from a series of conflicts. Let's remember, just in 100 years, there were two Balkan wars. There were First World War started in Sarajevo, there was Second World War, there were atrocities in the 90s. Do we think, I would like to have your thoughts on, do you think that we are doing enough in terms of education in preventing future conflicts, and that will be the basis for another hardships in the region? Because, as I know, we can agree on curriculum for computer science, for math, but when you go to history classes and geography, I think that in Croatia we have different lessons on history, recent history, opposed to Bosnia and Bosnia within Bosnia, Kosovo within.
Right.
I think that will do a new generation if we.
Thank you. I cut you short because you've made a very, very good point, and it's a very important point to raise at this point about curriculum in schools. So thank you very much indeed, but I have to cut you short. There's a lady there.
Yes, my name is Cornelia Abel from Transparency International, and I would, corruption, organized crime were mentioned as blockers to economic development in the region. So I would be really interested when you talked about the cooperation. It wasn't mentioned so clearly anymore. Where do the ministers here present see the main benefits of cooperating on improving the rule of law and the institution building? I know there's differences in the systems, but there should also be benefits there.
Right, thank you. I think that's it. I'm going to start now, go backwards actually, to start with you, Radislav, to answer some of the points. You don't have to answer each and every point that was raised, if I may say that to all the panelists. Just zero in on what you want to, the point you want to make.
Actually, the question about broader regional cooperation was among one of the issues I wanted to raise, because clearly, the region has been benefiting a lot from expertise, for instance, from Slovenia and Slovakia on macroeconomic management. Croatian example of sharing experience with from negotiation I have mentioned. Turkey has invested more than 1 billion into the region. So clearly, It cannot be only six countries cooperating. We have to be much smarter in connecting it with other important players, and not only Turkey, also Russia. We also know that Gulf states are significantly investing in the region, China. On rule of law, there are some initiatives. Goran knows more in anti-corruption area. We have regional anti-corruption initiative bringing together institutions and players in the area. There is increasing cooperation around chapter 23, 24 between countries. So, as I mentioned, on this softer but extremely important part of the agenda, regional cooperation is extremely important. On role of education in conflict prevention, actually, we believe that integration and especially economic integration is the best conflict prevention measure for two reasons, because there is a lot to lose, and second one, because it provides platform for interaction between businesses, institutions, people. The problem is if people do not know each other, that creates the space or institutions for some of the benign processes. I would stop here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bratislav. Goran, if you could be as snappy and short as Bratislav.
First, on TEFTA, I will ask my board in 2 weeks from now to allow for me to sign the MOU with TEFTA, because we see it as an organization which has proved its value. It is very much functioning. Yes, it is different with or without Croatia, but still this is one of these agreements which is working very well. And we, together with them, want to be a depository of every information related to economic developments in the region, and this is exactly what we will jointly present to the Commission. So, yes for TEFTA. And of course, I'm very much looking forward to see who is the new manager. It lasts for too long for me, but that's another issue. Second, money. Is it Russian? Is it Chinese? Is it coming from Arab Emirates? Is it coming from the EU member countries? Is very much welcome. I said it last year when I was here, and then there was an unease in the public. Please understand the ministers and their prime ministers have learned a lesson that it's not only the EU money coming in the region. Whoever is investing is most welcome, and they are doing this every day. Of course, there is one asterisk, and I would like to mention this is very much related to a rule of law, and there is a comparative advantage of the EU, and there it is very important that the projects which are to be done with Chinese or Russian, whoever else's money, are part of what we've agreed with the EU. An example, the railway, Belgrade, Subotica, and then further to Hungary, it might be built with Chinese money, but it is part of what we've agreed with the EU. It is a corridor, and therefore we will implement all regulations related and agreed with the EU. So this is how I see this issue when it comes to others and how do the others play in the region. Vienna Summit, Rajko, thank you very much for mentioning. Vienna Summit was a huge success. We are very much looking for a Paris Summit of the Western Balkans. And one of the issues there agreed, it was launched by the Prime Minister of Serbia, agreed by the Albanian Prime Minister. And then there were issues, and I can announce now, there was an agreement that the headquarters of RAIKO, meaning the Regional Youth Cooperation Office, will be in Tirana. Initially, Belgrade was mentioned, and then Tirana, and then joint bid, and then Serbia has agreed, and then everybody else has agreed. So we will have an office in Tirana, which will boost the cooperation, which will include the youth into this political and debate on all other issues. And the corruption, I've mentioned it, linking with the foreign money coming in. And I'd like to come back to what you asked. Rai was mentioned, regional anti-corruption initiative. What we have done as RCC, we have done an analysis on corruption risk assessment in public institutions. We have done anti-corruption assessment of legislation. It's all on our web. And this year, we've added to this Balkan barometer several questions related to whistleblowers' protection and how they are seen. And this is going to be published in May this year. And then we will follow with an engagement all over the region, particularly on whistleblower protection. There will be a follow-up. And then there was an issue related to... I'd like to join Dietmir. What he was trying to explain, I'd like to put in bold words. the gap is deepening, not only between the Western Balkans and the EU members, but also between the Western Balkans and the new EU members. And to great extent, thanks to this reallocation of support coming from the EU. It's a pre-accession money, a very limited, and then structural funds. It's been launched as an idea years back by Serbian Deputy Prime Minister responsible for EU integration. At that time, several years back, we were saying, guys, how about rethinking what you do? Help us catch up. Otherwise, what do we see happening, and someone has mentioned here, it is really that every citizen in our country is aware. They are 20, and they believe something will change. They like this or that party after elections. They are optimistic. They come back. And then 20 years later, they see it, nothing has changed. And then they leave. They go to Austria. They go to Germany. They go to the States. And I'm sorry, this is another wave of migrants happening every day from all of our countries, thanks to this result, that the gap is deepening, in spite of all good marks we were sharing among ourselves here. And this might lead us to rethink the system. Bold investment in the region in order to catch up with the EU, link with the rule of law and reform of the public administration, and then maybe less money once you're in. Otherwise, we may never catch up. That's a fear, and I'm sorry to have to say this, but I think it is very important to understand it. There I join you. Yeah. It is important to invest now, not once we are in, because it may never happen that way.
Thank you very much. The point about the rethinking of the current system is a very, very good one, and thank you very much indeed. Minister Abrash, please.
Thank you. Just to follow up on one or two questions, because I think Goran explained everything, but basically I'll catch up with the know-how and vocational training, something that we have to tackle, as discussed earlier. One of the solutions that we should end up, in order to catch up, what I said, EU should go beyond the usual. IPA funds are good, but it's too slow. It's too slow. Western Balkans 6, it's good. It's moving, but we need to find some other instruments in regards to tackle the human capital, something as a precondition to economic growth. So Paris Summit could be a good starting point, but we should add up and really put more into that. Another solution that we discuss within the government, or at least my ministry, in order to catch up when it comes to skills gap, is labor migration or circular migration. This skills gap is so wide. We have lots of young people studying social or humanities. The businesses and the needs are totally different. We need to retrain or have training programs. We're doing that. But if we could get labor migration agreements or circular migration, as they call it now, I think we could catch up really fast. We could catch up really fast into this. So we should really think about projects like this. We've done something with Germany, Kosovo, basically, since beginning of this year. It's moving along. It's moving on. We have an ease to basically all the sectors in Germany, pending that there is no EU citizens available for that job. But it's still it's moving along, and it's a good way forward. We should do that in more broad and with other countries as well. And coming back to the youth, totally agree. We just need basically more funds in any kind of youth intercultural programs that we might have, active citizenship programs and youth exchange program. I think this helps the region as well.
Thank you very much. Now, for the two foreign ministers, I really do want you to answer the question about the United Nations Secretary General appointment and about the education prevention of future conflicts or conflicts generally. So, first to you, Minister.
Don't worry. I will cover it all, trying to get a better grade from Goran until the end of the panel. First of all, CEFTA. It is a successful agreement that is functioning even after Croatia left. From the angle of Bosnia and Herzegovina, Croatia remains one of the most important foreign trade partners, and CEFTA remains number two market for our companies after the EU market. So I think it's successful, and we still have quite good expectations from this agreement in the future. There was also a question, very interesting question, on how the Russia, United States, China influence our European accession processes in the region. On behalf of Bosnia and Herzegovina, I can say that for us, European Union integration is the top and the key foreign policy priority, and this is something that we communicate very clearly to everybody, including the countries that I just mentioned. But Bosnia-Herzegovina tries to have ever-developing and improving relations with the other important players in the world. We, for example, also have some economic relations, economic expectations from the countries I mentioned, for example. We want to continue, for example, our relations with Russia, which is top five investor in the country, top seven foreign trade partner. We do not have any kind of obstacle or any kind of negative push due to our European integration intentions and processes. For example, with the United States of America, we have a couple of tens of thousands products that can go to United States from our producers without any taxation. For example, we also have expectations from famous 26 plus 1 that is going on with China. And overall, and also Turkey, I didn't forget Turkey. We have trilaterals with Croatia and Serbia, with Turkey, also important economic relations. We have this, for us, very important unilateral move by Turkey, letting us export big quantities of meat. It's about 10 to 15,000 tons yearly. And so overall, I think we can at least, I'm speaking on behalf of Bosnia-Herzegovina, continue developing relations with the other key players in the world, around the world, but the focus and the key priority remains our European integration process. On youth, I don't have to add much to what Goran already said. I think it's very important result of the process that is ongoing. This new organization, that was the idea launched by two prime ministers, Vučić and Rama, so we also look forward to having this office in Tirana and with all of this starting working very soon. I know, interesting question on the Secretary General of the UN. I think it is, at least from this point of view, not quite realistic to have one single candidate from the region that we will all back. But I do not think that through this we should assess bad feelings or bad relations in the region. Because I'm not saying it's not going to happen. I'm saying from this point of view, it's not likely that we're going to have it. But I think it's important that we do not have such relations that we would exclude possibility of supporting each other. For example, Bosnia-Herzegovina institutions that would discuss on this issue did not take any position so far, and I do not exclude the possibility of supporting, because that was the question right there, supporting somebody from our region. Education on the preventing the possible conflicts similar to the ones we had in the region, I think we are trying, but not trying hard enough, and we need to work more. Because it's when it comes to education, we can very hard find common ground on anything. I think we would even have problems on the physics and mathematics school books, and let alone history. So I think it's one step at a time approach that we need to take, and I think we all recognize it as a problem. And finally, the possible effects that we expect from the anti-corruption. We've talked about it a lot, so we know what it means for the economy. We know what it means for the possible new investors, because one of the researchers a few years ago said that in our region, when he or she comes, they have to pay 1 euro to somebody's pocket. After they pay 1 euro to the budget of any level for some taxation. So, of course, we understand all these effects, but I think I would like to underline one particular effect, and that is the change of the mentality, the change of the way of the thinking. And I will finish with one story. Again, I I want to say I'm sorry if somebody heard it already, but it is something that will probably very clearly portray what I want to say here. Some 6 or 7 years ago, we have these 10 cantons in the federation part of Bosnia-Herzegovina. One of the ministers in one of those cantons was caught speeding with his car 130, where it was 50 speed limit. And when he was asked if he would resign because of that, he said, "No, why would I resign? I became minister so I can drive fast as much as I can, you know." So this needs to change. This needs to change, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much for that. Minister Bishat.
Well, couldn't agree more with Igor on the question related to the position of Secretary General. It's too early, but we found understanding also on other issues. So a compromise-based solution should not be excluded. Concerning the question about regional cooperation and the fight against corruption, organized crime, and the rule of law related reforms, I believe chapters 23 and 24 are a very solid conceptual framework for all Western Balkan countries, and we have already felt the heat, but also the domino effect, Croatia, Montenegro, Serbia, Albania. More and more discussions, sometimes even conspiracy theories about special prosecution units on anti-corruption or on organized crimes. But the structures are there, and I wish and hope that in the coming months we'll see more regional cooperation, and these obligations emanating from chapters 23, 24 will beef up regional cooperation. We have, for the very first time, the Commission reports, which are not anymore called Commission Progress Reports, but just Commission reports, like the World Bank reports, IMF reports, so I don't really make the difference between World Bank and EU in this respect, although the mindset and the objectives are quite different. But again, for the very first time, Commission has introduced a methodology, a comparative table, in relation to rule of law reforms, where all countries can look at each other, and hopefully it would provide also a healthy competition that we have seen in the process of visa liberalization, where Commission provided also a comparative assessment that proved to be rather instrumental for the reform process. Concerning the so-called third actors or other actors in our region apart from EU, I couldn't agree more with Goran, but I would like to emphasize one element. It's very important to make a distinction between the competitors or the competition and complementarity. Not all actors that are present in our region or would like to be present in our region through investments or other projects do share similarly the same path that we analyzed here. So do not share necessarily all of them the European path or the European perspective of our region. It's important to create a conducive environment, but it's important also to be attentive, because we know that when money is flowing, it's very difficult to exclude also political interferences or political influences on that territory. So we ought to make sure that the goal, the main goal, is not being questioned. On school curricula, a very brief comment or remark. We are trying, first of all, to erase or delete any references which might sound discriminatory in relation to the neighbors, because we come from a complicated history of cooperation and competition, in some cases even wars. So we are trying to improve the curricula, but this is not sufficient, because as we have seen in the recent years, now we have to be careful and much more open when it comes to social acceptance, when it comes to violent extremism, and so we have to have a very clear picture when we speak about curriculas of future generations. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Just one suggestion. If you are looking for a candidate for the UN Secretary General post, I have a favorite. I'm willing to share that with you in private, and I would suggest that you vote for her. So I think she'd be a great person to take
so
over.
It's a
absolutely. Absolutely, she's a female. And she's from your regions, too, so she's perfect. But thank you very much indeed for a very brutally honest panel discussion, I have to say. I've let you guys talk for longer than I would have, and that's because you were saying very interesting things. So thank you very much indeed. I would like to continue the third panel in about 10 minutes or so. So if I could ask you all to come back, and please join me in thanking these wonderful men.